I'm going to ask Jennifer Ian Duncan Smith and John to join us up here. I'm going to ask for short, concise questions, and I'm going to ask for short, concise answers on behalf of here, so we can still end it at 2:30. And so the microphone is here at the podium or at the middle of the room. We'll take probably the first three, four, maybe five, if we're all very, very quickly. Ken.
All good presentations. As we talk a lot about social policy, I worry a little bit, and you called yourself a do tank, which made me wonder if what we really need in social policy is an undo tank. Which leads me to a very serious question, which is you proposed a bunch of things that we should be doing, and I don't want to comment on the veracity and the smartness of those, but to ask whether at the same time in your work you're identifying things that the government has to undo. One of the beautiful things about what the Harper government has done in the last little while in bringing forward the $100 per child is that they actually undid a national institutional daycare program that was starting to be in place. And I think as we do, we have to undo. And I actually would argue ideologically and from a social policy perspective, there's a lot more work to be done on the undo side than on the do side. I just would like your thoughts, Ian, on that.
Yeah, we do. In fact, all our reports have got what we would scrap inside those reports. You know, we're actually in the middle of doing a full program of integration for government, looking at the 300-400 policy options that we're talking about and all the other areas, and I'm just about to plug into the middle of that a cost efficiency assessment, because I am convinced it is possible actually to value all of the policies you put in on a bottom line ROI, return on investment. In fact, this has been done in some parts elsewhere. Washington State's doing it quite interestingly. It's an organization doing it, and we've got some stuff going, so we're going to build that model, which allows you to value the programs. This is not done in government in the UK. They just spend the money and hope for the best. I mean, it wouldn't happen anywhere else in life, but I don't know if it's the same here, but it seems to me most governments seem to say, this is a good idea, we'll spend some money on it. And then ask about 2 years later just how effective that's been, then the civil servants bolt bits on and everything changes. So valuing that would also mean valuing existing programs and scrapping them, and that would be one of the beauties of this, actually, is chopping some of the rubbish at this present moment. I think the present Labour government has been throwing at us.
Yes. Dr. Roy.
A couple of comments. About 6 months ago, I went to a Fraser presentation by Senator Hugh Siegel, who suggested a negative income tax to do away. In Canada, we have hundreds of programs for all kinds of things. And if we did away with all of that and had just one program where we had a negative income tax, which basically works up to a guaranteed annual income, would that be a better solution to some of these problems? And the other thing I like about what your approach was is that I find that the huge government spending separates us from the poor and those who need our help. And I think that as individual Canadians or individual citizens, we have a duty to our fellow man on an individual basis, which the government takes away from us and lets us think we can do that without thinking about it too much.
John.
Yeah, okay. I'll handle the first one, which is on the negative income tax. Senator Siegel has been talking about that idea for at least 15 years. The problem is that it doesn't just imply lower taxes, but also implies a government benefit, which is really across the board in that it doesn't account for different circumstances. You could be 18, and if your income is below the negative income tax, then you'll receive a benefit. You could be 40 with several kids. So it doesn't, I think tax relief and social spending has got to be separated. Taxes are about raising revenue in the least harmful manner from society, lower, flatter, simpler, for example, get rid of a lot of the special exemptions and deductions, with the exception of a basic personal amount per individual and for kids, keep it flat, and then target your spending on the other side, as opposed to this, what's your income, is it below this level, well, we'll send you a check if it is, without any recognition that circumstances vary. I mean, most people, when they're in school, I'm a student now, I mean, technically I'm probably in poverty by the social indicators, but I don't feel like I'm in poverty. I certainly don't deserve help from the government, so.
I think we did some work on this, not with the CSJ, but I've done it on other times, and I'm We are where we are, and the present government in the UK has been busy merging benefits, the welfare system and the tax system. It's been a total disaster. So the best thing we do is separate them again, really, I think. And I guess sometimes I'm a bit struck by one-bullet solutions, and I'm never quite certain that they always, and sometimes they miss and hit somebody else. And that's my concern, is it with one-bullet solutions. But so really just looking at the programs that incrementally resolve most of these issues and getting rid of the ones that don't, I think is pretty much my way of approaching.
Thank you. The Honourable Mr. Duckett-Smith painted this really vivid picture of life on estates and sort of children parenting children, and they don't have these skills, and it's frustrating, and how do you sort of change this? Mr. Williams was talking about how the Conservative government, you know, we have this child tax benefit or the child benefit where you give money to families. And my question is, how do you help women, single mothers, who have these children, who don't have the parenting skills? Like, how do you sort of give them these skills? And, I mean, one way of sort of helping the kids without helping the mother is if you have really high-quality childcare, not just any childcare, but really high-quality childcare. Then, you know, you're not really addressing the problem of the parenting, but, I mean, is childcare sort of a temporary solution while you improve kind of the quality of the potential of these children's lives? Or how can you sort of reconcile the need to have children be parented with the parents not knowing how to do that?
I'll say one thing.
Yeah. I would say one of the things I was trying to get at with the education analogy is that our grasping for solutions usually is, our imaginations are often constrained by the categories of the existing welfare state. So we look for education solutions and childcare solutions and healthcare, you know, when really these problems manifest in very intermingled ways. And the best efforts to help people with those intermingled problems are ones on the ground that know them. And so, you know, in America, we have pregnancy care centers, and they end up being counselors for all kinds of things beyond pregnancy, dealing with the suicide of a brother and paying for funeral costs and things like this. And so I would say that the seeing how we can integrate our strategies on these, empowering civil society organizations that are able to take on the holistic, transformational service that we're looking forward to here, I think that's the way we've got to think about it. Now, Ian may have some very specific examples of initiatives.
I encourage you to read the early intervention stuff that I've been doing quite recently, because that has pretty much all the answers. Fact is that you can turn around parenting, but the state can't do it. State is a hopeless replica parent. Look, we take kids into care, and the state, I was going to swear then, but I'm not going to. The state makes their life worse, how's that? Even from the dysfunctional parents. I mean, kids in care in our area achieve less than they would if they were still with their dysfunctional parents. That's how shocking. They may not be quite so abused, but they're certainly less academically. So I think the state's the last people that should actually do this. However, in places like Colorado, where I've looked at these programs, been doing it for 20, 25 years, with voluntary sector organizations, including things that lots of people heard of now called the Nurse Family Partnership and others. These are not governmental bodies, but they're bodies set up by people understanding how to help a mother get parenting skills. They have actually turned around whole communities in a quite breathtaking way, really quite breathtaking, by reestablishing that flow of knowledge which has gone missing in two generations. So that's essentially it. Government can help by supporting these and nurturing those groups. You've got a great group here called the Roots of Empathy in Canada, which is a remarkable group about stopping young teenage mums having kids. Why do they do? They bring, get teenage mums to come into the school and tell about their lifestyle and let these kids look after the baby. And it's astonishing the fall-off rate in kids from those schools who then go on to have babies, suddenly realizing how ghastly this whole process is. So, you know, the reality is that this stuff is just bringing them back into the real world, and it happens. So it is possible to do all of that. Childcare, well, that may form a part of it, but my concern about state saying we're going to take your children off and get somebody else to bring them up is rather like the state doing it, and I'm not very keen on the state in this area because I think we've made such a mess of things.
Just really quickly, I think this is maybe where there's a view that I disagree with, that somehow the state is better equipped to provide parenting skills than parents are. And that's not just to suggest that parents know everything from the get-go, but I think they're in a better position to learn faster than government is. And at the end of the day, I think that's where we want to focus on parents and do what we can. And even now we see the daycare lobby is beginning to acknowledge that it is best actually for kids to stay with their parents for at least the first 3 years, if not longer. And that's a turnaround from where they were when they had the high ground and they were insisting that, in fact, it didn't matter at all. So that's why we want to gear these towards parents as opposed to the state.
We're going to let the last two questions go. I can't, Ken. I'm sorry, we're running out of time.
Just a quick fact. The NDP in the last election ran on doubling the per-child exemption payment to kids under six that we ran on in 2006. So what John Williamson is saying, even the left is acknowledging that payments directly to parents is the right thing to do.
Naresh and the lady behind you, I sort of know your name, but short questions, short answers, please.
Unfortunately, Canada, we're about to begin a debate and a discussion on polygamy and the implications for that. Britain has already, in some ways, accepted polygamous marriages, and you've accepted Sharia courts. Due to the demographic changes in Canada and our lax immigration system, we are about to engage in this debate more fully, and I'm just wondering if we can have some comments from you, Mr. Duncan-Smith, on what's happening in the UK and how successful those practices have been, and maybe John, given your recent time in London, if you can tell us about that from your perspective as
you
well.
You wanted a short answer on this?
I've been in the library for 6 months, so I'm going to pass on that.
We don't have polygamy in the UK that I'm aware of, certainly. I can't know of anybody. My wife would say one is quite enough, and probably more than enough, to be honest with you. So I don't quite know. Maybe I'm missing the point of this question. I'm not sure. Oh, Islam we're talking about. Okay, I'm being really stupid. Okay, fine. Well, the whole, this is a long answer. I'm not going to give it. All right. It's all about the acceptance of the standards that are the standards of the country that you're in, and not the standards of the country that you came from. And there is a whole process of people who come to live in a country getting a balance of that, tolerance for their own values, but there are values based on the legal system in there that have to be observed. There's a big debate going on about Sharia law at the moment in the UK. I'm absolutely opposed to any acceptance that a community should be governed on a different set of laws. And in fact, most of the Muslim community in a poll said they did not want to be governed under Sharia law in the UK. So any of the extremists. So invariably stand by tolerance, but do not stand by license.
Understood. Catherine.
Hi, I'm Claudia Hepburn with the Fraser Institute. I have spent the past 10 years advocating school choice. I appreciate both your two comments on school choice. And I was interested in this morning's National Post article on you, Ian, that you are advocating financial education in the high schools, which as someone who has advocated school choice, I've generally been against more prescriptions from the government and control from central government over what's being taught in our schools. But with the current economic crisis, it did strike me as that it might perhaps be a policy that's appealing and would be beneficial to so many families that don't get that education from their parents. And I wonder if you could comment on that briefly, because I know we don't have very much time.
It's interesting, I didn't know they'd pick this up because I didn't read the paper, but it was one of our prescriptions in the debt section was that there should be more done to make money, the running of your money easier to understand. Most kids can't tell what an interest rate is when they leave school, even if they've done algebra. They just don't understand money. In fact, I suspect, you know, lots of people in this room probably all sit quietly, hunched down, wouldn't be able to tell me what their tax was. But the point is that it's just simply trying to connect all this airy-fairy stuff that kids get taught at school with a practical point, which is understanding how money works would be a very good thing to know as you leave school, simply because managing your bills, how do you, you know, what is cash flow, how does it work, how do you know, when do you have to pay bills, how much, when you don't pay your credit cards off, what does that actually mean, how much more does that mean, just, you know, well, that's all it means. It means about telling people that the mathematics that you've learnt or been asleep out at the back of the class, in fact, this is what it really means to you, and if you know nothing more than that, you'll probably be a reasonable citizen, and if you know more than that, well, if you can take it from there.
I'll just say that education policy, I think, is one of the thornier issues to translate from one country to another because our systems are so different. We have different populations and different, you know, state, federal, et cetera. But this is, I think, illustrative of how we need to import and export policy generally. Take the essential piece of what Ian's just described, put it in wherever a curriculum is decided in your country. You know, government schools do have curriculum deciding bodies, and that is, you know, they're teaching all other kinds of nonsense. Let's get them back to, arguably, this could be under the 3 R's. So.
Thank you very much. It.